Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for being with us. What a beautiful day it is. 12:06 right now. You heard the man. 57 degrees in the Twin Cities, heading for the mid-60s. Nice day before Mom's Day. A nice day to start the fishing opener. Yep. It's a weekend for fishing and for Mom. Yes, the Minnesota fishing opener is underway. It got cranking just after midnight, and hordes of anglers, male and female, are out there. And some absent anglers are thinking about getting back home tomorrow in time to honor Mother on her special day, Mother's Day. Of course, lots of moms say the best Mother's Day present they could have is to be home alone with peace and quiet, huh? So let them go fishing. Stay out there in the boat. Good afternoon, everybody. Stan Turner with you here. Happy to have your company. And look at Kyle's over there. You got your hat on, your summer hat. It looks like we're finally in warm weather mode here, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Nice to hear, yeah. You an angler, Kyle? Do you like to get out there and wet a line?
I haven't in quite a while.
What's keeping you away from going after the fish, Kyle? Does it bore you? Or
A little bit, yeah.
Sitting in a boat. Some people live for it. They dream about it all winter long. So God bless them all. They're having fun, but, you know, catch those fish, but don't forget Mother. Okay. Well, of course, some good things in life. No season, no special holiday. You know, it seems we human beings are hardwired to watch other people. Yes, watch them, especially when those other people are up there on the television or motion picture screen. Yes, even on the small screen of our handheld devices. Motion pictures are a staple of our lives. We never seem to tire of what's new on the big or the little screen. It's well to remember that movies have a rich history, a history that's worth preserving, just like the films themselves. We all owe a special debt to people like Bob DeFloris. Bob has made it his life's work to find, preserve, restore, archive, and go out in the community and show these otherwise lost or forgotten or undervalued films that millions of people once knew. Bob grew up in Hollywood but has lived and worked in Minnesota for the past few decades. He's a good friend and a guy who does important work safeguarding our film heritage. And also, he's known lots of stars over the years. And does Bob have stories to tell? Good afternoon, Mr. DeFloris. How are you, sir?
Thank you, Stan. It's always good to be on your show.
Thank you. The good flows our way to yours, because you always enrich the airwaves. We get tons of response, always positive response when you're on the air here, because not only do you know your subject, films, preservation, and all the rest, but you know so many of the fantastic stars who, you know, even young people, they seem to know quite a bit about the so-called stars of the golden, you know, silver screen, golden age.
Definitely,
of Hollywood.
Yes.
And surprising how much they know. Before we plunge into, we have many topics. We had a ball talking before the show went on the air today. I think maybe we should have, Kyle, we should have broadcast what we were talking about last hour. Bob and I were just reminiscing. He's got so many great stories. But kind of on a sad note, but this does tie into you. I mentioned you grew up in Hollywood. Do you believe that it was 75 years ago yesterday that Rick Nelson was born?
That's right.
75.
Yes.
Ricky Nelson, of course, the wisecracking little kid on the Ozzie and Harriet television show of the 1950s. His brother David, his father Ozzie, mother Harriet, and Bob DeFloris. You lived right across the street from
That's
them.
That's right,
didn't you?
Yeah. They were a great, great family. They were really nice neighbors and had a lot of fun living, you know, in that area with them. And I can recall the images in my mind today, just like it was yesterday.
Yeah. Ricky Nelson, of course, became a great teen idol, had a string of hits on the top 40. Fine singer, entertainer. What was he like? People want to know. Okay, we know him from his screen, his television image. He was in some movies, too.
Right.
But what was he like out there? You used to play street football with him.
That's right, yeah. We'd be out in the street playing football. Naturally, it was his football, like I mentioned before.
Yeah.
And if he didn't, if the ball wasn't thrown to him on occasion, he would just take his ball and head back to his house.
I would take my marbles and go home.
And so we would all be out in the street looking at him as he's walking off. And he was kind of...
Was he a bit of a brat once in a while?
During the early years when he just started his television show, he was kind of a little like a brat.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he got older, he was still not so much a brat, but he was very shy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When you see him up there singing, and he's actually, you know, doing what he loves to do naturally, is doing his music and entertaining the public. Mm-hmm. But when that is off, when he's through doing that, he's very withdrawn.
Yep.
Very shy.
A lot of people don't realize that. That's not an unusual trait among show business people, that they really truly are. Right. They live in a fishbowl, they perform in a fishbowl, but they're really shy people.
Yeah.
They force themselves to go out there and do their thing.
I just can't believe some of the people that I've met off the screen. You know, you have to almost draw things out of them for them to say.
And it's not an act, is it?
It's not an act, no.
Right.
And then there's some that are usually the same way they are on the screen. Like I met Jimmy Stewart and was with him. You know, we did a little tribute out in Hollywood to him. And he'll sit there and you feel like you've known him for years and he's funny. And, you know, it's just a wonderful guy. And not so much acting when he's on the screen. He's basically himself, actually.
Rick Nelson, maybe a bit of a brat along the way, but here he was under terrific pressure. He was part of a huge television show. It was one of the most popular TV shows of the 50s.
Yeah.
And he's a very young kid when he gets going. He and his brother David joined their parents. First the radio show, then they migrated to television, and he became a real big deal. I know he became a very nice guy, actually. He was shy.
I
think his talent as a singer is greatly underrated, too. The guy was really good.
Right.
Really good. So your memories of him are positive.
And I always felt that if I leave this world and would ever come back as somebody, I'd love to look like Rick Nelson.
Bebop, baby. Yeah. You could do worse, my man. You could do worse.
Yeah.
Anyway, a fond remembrance of Rick Nelson.
Great memories of him.
A friend of Bob DeFloris, grew up right across the street from Bob in Hollywood back in the 50s?
50s,
early 50s.
Yeah, mid-50s.
Mid-50s, right. Wow, what a memory. And where you're sitting right now, just last week, Bob DeFloris, we had a guy named whom you know very well, Joe Mingaris.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the seat there talking about a brand new musical at History Theater in downtown St. Paul. It's called River Road Boogie, the Augie Garcia
story. Yes, I've heard about that.
Yes,
wonderful.
Now you came to Minnesota after Augie was not performing.
But I heard his name all through the years.
You always did. Augie Garcia had a quintet, and he was he was a music man here. He's called the godfather of Minnesota rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, before rock and roll was named rock and roll. He was doing, you know, he was Mexican-American, so he had the Latin influence, but he grabbed some jump blues and boogie-woogie and R&B and then what became known as rock and roll and put it all together, and he was the biggest thing going musically in Minnesota. He opened for Elvis Presley one summer night in 1956 at the St. Paul Auditorium. He was, you know, just the opening act.
Right.
The big deals like Colonel Parker, who managed or mismanaged Elvis, would look for a local band that would just send him out there, warm up the kids, keep the kids busy till the big star Elvis comes out. Well, Augie and his quintet went out there on the stage. They were so hot, they had the kids so riled up that Parker came out and told them, get off the stage. You're going to upstage Elvis.
Yeah.
That's how good the guy was.
Yes, no, and that's amazing.
So it really is. So Joe Mingaris has written the screenplay for River Road Boogie, the Augie Garcia story. Bob, I was at the premiere performance a week ago tonight. Fantastic, full house. Augie's wife was there, his family, and everybody loved it. It's really
I'm going to have to catch it.
You're going to have to catch it. Tell us about Joe. Joe Mingaris, who is the screen. This guy's involved in movies, isn't he?
I've known Joe for many years.
Yeah.
He's a very good friend. And, of course, you know, he has Pepito's, Mexican food, and the Parkway Theater.
Oh, both those are his.
Both of those are his. Right. But many years ago, he came up to me and very seriously said, I'm thinking about going out to California for about a year, and I'd like to get into acting. And he wanted to know, you know, the ins and outs of doing that.
About what year would that have been, Bob?
I'm not
roughly,
too sure. I'm going to guess maybe 80s, somewhere in the 80s,
right.
Somewhere in there. And anyway, he knew it wasn't easy. Everybody wants to go to Hollywood and get in the movies and be a writer, director, work at studios or whatever. But he went out there. I introduced him to my cousin, who's a producer, director for a lot of TV episodes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went out there. I didn't hear from him for a long time. I go to Southdale to their movies one night. I'm looking up at the screen. there's Joe as a cop in this movie, and not a bit part, a real good part. And I thought, wow, that's not bad for being in, I think it was Shelley Long was in the movie with him, you know. Yeah. And then about a month later, I go to another movie, and there he is in this other movie. And I thought, you know, for someone going out to California and getting into some of these movies, he's doing pretty good. And especially being a Latino actor. And he did very well. He was in a lot of movies locally here. He was in plays. I mean, he's part of the show business.
He's a stand-up comic,
too. He's a stand-up comic. You know, a restaurateur, you name it.
And a screenwriter.
Playwright.
Yeah,
I mean,
guy.
He's done it all. But I got to give him credit. He set his mind to that. His wife and family agreed to that. They were going to allow him to go out there for a year and see what he could do. He went out there and made I don't know how many movies. And then he came back home. And but it was something he had to do.
Yep.
And thank goodness he did it, because he did a lot of memorable parts. And and especially with this now that he's done on Augie Garcia, I mean, that shows you that he's a very creative, inventive, I just don't know what other words I can use to express.
Kind of the Renaissance man. He can do it
all.
He's
a Renaissance man. Yes, definitely.
Well, he had his 15 months of fame in Hollywood or whatever it was.
Well,
and satisfied him. Boy, he did well.
He did very well.
Well, that's nice to hear. So you helped him along the way there with your advice. And Joe Majors, what a nice guy. And make sure you get to the River Road Boogie.
I will do that.
Augie Garcia. You'll be justly and richly rewarded, my friend. The Hollywood of your youth. Bob DeFloris, you grew up there. What were the years as a kid?
Well, I was born in San Francisco, but then I was I had asthma real bad, so my folks had to move me to a little bit drier climate. So they moved to Hollywood, and so I lived there from 1940 into the 50s, so to speak.
All right.
And my folks were show business people, and then they split up after a while, and then I had to live a year with my dad in California, a year with my mother in Kansas City. After 7 years of going back and forth, I decided to live with my mother, who lived in a nice neighborhood, nice schools, whereas if I had stayed with my dad, I would have been traveling all around the country and living out of a suitcase, which I really didn't mind in a way, but it was a better life for me, so I did that. I chose that.
Your dad and mom were show business people. What'd your mom do?
My mother played the maracas and castanets, sang, danced.
Portuguese, right?
She was from, yes, Portuguese. My dad is from Costa Rica, Central America, and played the guitar. And boy, did they look nice. They made their own outfits. I don't know if many of you remember Cesar Romero, who was an actor out in Hollywood. My dad looked like Cesar Romero, had the silk blouses, the cummerbund, the tight black pants, and boy, he looked like dynamite on the stage.
Wow.
And I used to, you know, follow him around the country when I was little. Yeah. And they entertained out there, and like I'd mentioned on a previous show, when the Latins were very prominent in Hollywood, Desi Arnaz, Carmen Miranda, Tito Guisar, Enrique Madriguera and his orchestra, you know, all of those Latin groups. He was part of that era. And it was a wonderful era because everybody in Hollywood and all the Latinos, entertainers, knew each other. So it's not like, you know, Tito Guisar was a good friend of my dad's, but he's also a friend of Desi Arnaz, you know, and so they all kind of knew each other in the business. So they weren't all scattered.
A Latino grapevine.
A Latino grapevine. But it was a wonderful era. And they had orchestras, Latino orchestras in Hollywood. Enrico Madriguera was very popular from South America and came to Hollywood. And he was in movies. He was on the radio. You name it.
Hot Latin rhythms would live on. They still
fantastic.
Do. But they really informed early rock and roll, the doo-wop groups.
That's right.
Especially the Drifters. We
that's
just
right.
lost Benny King this past week.
Yeah.
Lieber and Stoller were from the West Coast. They
that's
were
right.
songwriters. And they always infused their rock songs with the Latino rhythms. Beautiful stuff.
One of a quick story here. I was part of a Sacramento traditional Dixieland Jazz Festival every year. People come from all over the world, 100 Dixieland bands. The band that knocked them out of their seats was Paco Gatsby from Guatemala.
Paco Gatsby.
Yeah.
The great Gatsby.
They did salsa Dixieland.
Oh, boy.
So when they pepped it up, Everybody got out of their seats, was marching down the street. It was the hit. It was the hit of the whole event.
That sounds terrific.
So, yeah, Latin, it doesn't mean just Latin music.
No.
Like you said with Augie, you know, changing it, making
right.
So, yeah, that's your...
Kind of putting it all together, drawing
all
from many
together.
Different sources.
Definitely, yes.
We're reliving the golden era of Hollywood from a guy who was there, Bob DeFloris, film archivist, preservationist, expert, authority on film, back when film was film and motion pictures were motion pictures. Bob lived it. He was there. He saw it. And we're going to get through his eyes, through his memory, what it was like walking down to Hollywood and Vine back in the 50s, and the people you'd see on the street you wouldn't believe. We're back with Bob DeFloris right after this. The Stillwater area is most fortunate to be the home of Valley Bookseller, located right on Main Street in downtown. If you or anyone you know likes to read, this is the bookstore for you. Books, book clubs, book specials, book events, and more books. Check out their website at valleybookseller.com to see events, special sales, and staff recommendations. Call 651-430-3385. Valley Bookseller. Great books. Great people. 217 Main Street, North Stillwater.
The 1920s were a golden age for baseball and custom-tailored clothing. That golden age is back at Jaime's Haberdashery in St. Paul. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Make each visit uniquely yours with hats, suits, casual wear, and accessories. Visit their barbershop for a hot lather shave. It's the golden age again at Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at jaimes.com.
Hi, I'm Kathy Wolf Swanson. And hey, I'm Pat Wolf. Our motto has always been to ask for Wolf. But Prohibition forced our family to stop brewing Wolf beer. To this day, our legacy can still be seen all over Stillwater. So it's only fitting, Kathy, that Wolf beer is back in the valley, especially after a 93-year dry spell. Don't you think Great-Grandpa Joe would be so proud? I do. And that's why we invite you to visit wolfbrewing.com and click on Beer Finders to locate a store near you. And then ask for Wolf's, Stillwater's original craft beer.
You finally found it, that old photograph of your grandmother that you've always wanted to share with your grandchildren, but it's torn, cracked, and faded. Well, don't despair. Bring it in to Images of the Past in Stillwater. They specialize in restoring and preserving memories for future generations. So when you bring your old photos to Images of the Past, you can share that beautiful photograph with your grandchildren. You can see examples at klbbradio.com. Keyword, photo. Think of the future, preserve the past. On Main Street in Stillwater at Images of the Past.
We are back with a guy I like to call Mr. Movies, Bob DeFloris here, a guy who has lived Hollywood during its golden era, and that doesn't mean that he doesn't know what's going on in motion pictures today, but Bob, that's a special time for you and all of us movie lovers. There was something very special.
There was.
About, well, you can go back to the 30s, when the talkies came in, 30s, 40s,
right.
High water mark.
Right.
50s, too.
Right.
After the 50s, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's up to you folks what you think of movies after, say, 1960 or so. But I think maybe the golden era was starting to appear in the rearview mirror by
That's
that
right.
time.
That's
the high
right.
water mark might have been passed by that time. Tell us what it was like growing up in Hollywood. Walking down the street in Hollywood. You're around Hollywood and Vine. You're a kid. What do you see? Whom do you see as you're walking
Well,
around?
In the middle, I would say about 1947, I remember walking with my father down Hollywood Boulevard. Very clean. I mean, so clean you wouldn't believe it. And, you know, somewhat still new. I mean, even though it has been around for a while. People back then, there were no Levi's. People got dressed in, like, slacks, even kids, you know, with some kind of a shirt on. It was just a beautiful era. The Hollywood Boulevard was just something really to see. And they're trying to redo it. But I'll be very honest with you, they're cleaning it up, but there's still a lot of garbage on the streets, and there's all kinds of characters, you know, on skateboards, and it doesn't have the class and romance that the old Hollywood Boulevard did. But I do remember walking down the street and coming towards my father and I was Alan Ladd. And as he passed us, you know, we said hi, and I turned around, and I heard this clop, clop, clop. And I thought, what's that noise, Dad? And it was his elevator shoes. And back then, when you had elevator shoes, they were like horses' hoofs. They were real clotty looking.
Tell people what elevator shoes, in case they don't
know. Elevator shoes were to make you taller. And in order to do that, the back part of your shoe had to be built up. You were actually walking kind of on your tiptoes a little bit. And so after I saw that, I thought, now when I go to the movies and see Alan Ladd, and they always had him on a soapbox if the girl was taller or what have you.
You didn't see the soapbox.
But, you didn't see that part of it, you know. Cary Grant pulling up to a stoplight in his Lincoln Continental.
Mm-hmm. Would people say,
good afternoon, Cary.
And he would,
wave to you, and he'd take off in his Lincoln Continental. Mickey Rooney walking across the street. A lot of stars just coming, like, you know, natural people. Mm-hmm. Good morning, how are you? Yeah, I'm fine, thanks. You know, it was just a wonderful time. And I always keep telling people this, because at one time in Hollywood, all the neighborhoods were loaded with magnolia and gardenias, and which made the neighborhoods smell so wonderful, along with the eucalyptus trees. But what's happened, when you go back now, hardly nothing as far as magnolia and gardenias. Eucalyptus trees are still there. The neighborhood where I grew up with Ozzie and Harriet, somewhat run down, houses aren't painted, weeds in the street. And I told my dad, this is many years ago when we went back to the old site where we were raised. By the way, the house we lived in belonged to Doris Dowling. And Doris Dowling was an actress. Her sister was Constance Dowling. And they'd go off to Europe for a year and rent the house out for a year or two. And so we rented the house. Well, little did I know it, Doris, before we went into the house, said, "I don't want you touching my records. You have the house is all yours except for the records." And it had never registered with me why she didn't want us using the records. She was married to Artie Shaw. And that was a lot of his records and her records, and it's very special. They had to play him or nobody else.
He was a great band leader and a marvelous
player. And so that's the house we lived in.
Wow.
So I had a friend of mine last year go to that street and shoot the house. Yeah. Went, knocked on the door. A young couple lived there. Mm-hmm. Took pictures of them out in front and the side, and sent me the pictures and said, "Here's your old house where you lived."
Now, Bob, Doris is long gone. You can tell us the truth. Did you touch those records?
I was tempted, but I think I left them. They were in like a wooden cabinet next to the wall.
Uh-huh.
And I just, by the way, Doris Dowling, when she looked at you, it was like Gail Sondegard. I mean, she was very serious type, so I didn't mess with any records.
So Hollywood was almost like a Hollywood set itself back then.
It was like a Hollywood set.
Yeah,
a lot of people in the neighborhood, Barry Fitzgerald, Otto Banju, a lot of stars from Columbia Studios, just, you know, directors, producers, comedians. Just, you know, you go down, like I said, Hollywood Boulevard 2, there'd be a lot of the old vaudeville stars that played in the vaudeville walking down the street, and somebody would recognize them, you know.
Young people like Angela over here and Kyle in the control room, you probably see people like that in drugstores waiting to be discovered, wannabe
actors
and actresses.
I think he's got a chance. Actually.
I do, too. But you would see young people hanging around hoping to be discovered.
Oh, definitely, yes.
They'd come to town.
Well,
I think there were actually dormitories set up for young unattached women, young women who came out looking to become actresses.
Could be. I mean,
it is.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, something people ask, okay, how did Bob DeFloris get into preservation, finding, preserving, cataloging, archiving, saving this legacy of motion picture? There was a signal event you've told me about in 1947.
Yes.
You tell us what happened.
Well, when we lived in the house, which is in the neighborhood, you know, right across from Ozzie and Harriet, she had some old newspapers in there from back years. And this one was in 1947. And so I had seen a picture, and it said Universal Studios burns 400 nitrate films in this big lot.
Burns.
Set a match to them. Nitrate's very flammable. And I thought, why are they doing that? Well, what it was basically was a lot of their silent movies, like The Hunchback of Notre Dame, Phantom of the Opera, Lon Chaney. So that's why most of those films aren't found in the United States today. They're found overseas in archives over there, because we would send these films over to Europe to be viewed. Sometimes they wouldn't mail them back. So, and in a way, that's good because they kept them and took care of them. So when you get films that are missing, they're usually found in Czechoslovakia or, you know, over in, you know, Hungary or some of the countries like that overseas. RKO used to send their films down to South America with Fred Astaire. And they wouldn't get the whole feature back. They would get maybe reels 1, 2, and 9, but then the rest of the movie was missing. So that's why a lot of the RKO. But anyway, they destroyed a lot of silent movies, which are now, they're finding some in private collections. And if you ask me where I find these,
I want to, because there are some fantastic stories.
Okay,
here.
I got a call many years ago from a lady named Ethel Bishman in Crystal, Minnesota. And she had seen me on Channel 5 talking about nitrate films and preservation. She says, I got this old film out in my, I think it was in the barn, covered with feathers and hay.
Like a
and,
chicken coop.
Yeah,
out there.
Chicken coop. And she said the salesman used to come through town and go on to maybe North Dakota next and then on to the next state. And he would represent Universal and have films with him. Well, he left this one behind, and he never came back.
Why would
to
he have gone to
up.
Her house? I don't quite follow.
I guess he knew the family somehow,
oh, okay.
Or the
okay.
people that, you know, maybe were there
okay.
before.
Okay.
And so anyway, he left this film there. Mm-hmm. So she said, can you come out and look at it? So I came out and dusted the chicken feathers off and everything. And I looked at the stamps on it, said, you know, 1921. And Universal, and I thought, uh-oh, this is probably one of the missing films that they burned in 1947. Well, sure enough, it was the only existing print of Outside the Law with Lon Chaney Sr., Priscilla Dean, Wheeler Oakman. And so I called the American Film Institute. They said, please, we found a partial print overseas. I think it was in Czechoslovakia, but it's not... I don't know whether it was complete, but they just didn't want to go there and get that one. But this was the only one. It had a little slight damage. So I sent it off to them. They restored it. I got a print of it. Then I Black Hawk Films down in Iowa wanted to release it for the home market if you were a collector. So then they went. I went down there, and of course we'll get to that story
we
later.
Will.
But anyway... that's how it starts, and then there are other places in the Twin Cities, like the Tommy Gibbons-Jack Dempsey
Please
fight.
Please tell us about this. This is okay. a storied, legendary fight back in 1923, is it right?
1923, Shelby, Montana.
Okay,
yeah.
Tommy Gibbons, a local Twin Cities
right.
boy, I think a St. Paul boy.
Right.
Fighting a guy named... Jack
Dempsey.
Dempsey, the Manassa Mauler, and they had this fight. This was a
right.
world-renowned fight in Shelby, Montana, 1923.
Right.
And it would have been, they did film it. It was silent, of
right.
course, before
right.
talking.
Right, poor sound.
But lost, we think, lost to humanity. Man.
All they had was, of that fight, was 10 minutes.
And it was about a 15-round fight, so
yes,
it took all
15,
day.
Yeah, 15-round fight. And so it was in good shape, by the way, because I in the garage in St. Paul.
You found this in a garage?
Yeah, and the gentleman that had it...
Did he call you? How did you find out about this?
I found out about it, I believe, through a friend of mine who put me in touch with the gentleman mm-hmm. that had it.
Okay.
Then I called him and then went out to his house. Then I called the American Film Institute. They said, definitely, ship it out there again. And with, at that time, Jim Jacobs... And I believe Bill Caton had fights of the century. They're well known in the fight business. And if you remember in the 1950s, there were the Friday night fights where they'd go back and you'd see Lewis and all the Joe Lewis and all the fights. They paid for the restoration. They made a print for the gentleman that had it. And I was supposed to get a print, but I never did receive it. But then many years later... the gentleman called me up. He lived in a building with a friend of mine, Jim Vaughn. He was kind of a neighbor in the same apartment. And he loaned me the film to digitize. So I digitized the film. And then many years later, he passed away. I don't know what happened to the film, but I have it digitized, round by round, beautiful.
All 15 rounds,
all 15,
the whole fight.
The whole thing. And then the thing that was interesting, Dempsey came in with Jack Doc Kern, who was the manager there. And when they came in and did the fight, they bankrupted the whole town of Shelby, Montana.
They bankrupted it.
Yeah, because they took all the money, actually, Dempsey and his manager. So,
in the gate, people at Bay Washington.
Well, yeah, yes, yeah, yeah. They put so much money into building the arena and the seats and everything, and the amount of money Dempsey wanted, and the manager just took it all, and that left the town kind of, you know, not in the plus. That's for sure. But anyway, it's a great fight to see. It shows Gibbons warming up and Dempsey warming up. And actually, the American Film Institute gave me a little five-minute piece of film that they found to attach with that, where you see Shelby, Montana, the camera going down the old mud streets, all the people in the straw hats, the saloons, everything that set up how the town was before Dempsey and them came in and made the arena.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yes, it's classic. And then I was on Channel 5 with, I believe, Tommy Gibbons' wife.
Mm-hmm.
That was many years ago. I still have that on videotape, mm-hmm. which I might give to Tom Osmond because mm-hmm. Yes. It's historical.
Right.
But anyway, yes, it was a major fight.
For the record, Jack Dempsey won the fight, didn't he?
Definitely. But it wasn't a knockout.
It's a decision, not a knockout. How about that?
Yeah.
You mentioned being in Iowa, Blackhawk Films. They licensed distribution, I guess. So you're down there in Iowa one day, 1976, I think.
Yeah, somewhere.
You go to a diner.
Bicentennial.
You try to get a bite to eat.
Yes.
And tell us whom you see or think you see across the way there at another table.
I'm in the buffet line, and next to me is a lady, and then I'm looking beyond her. And I look at this guy with white hair, very distinguished. And I thought, oh, my God, I know who that is. What's he doing here in Davenport, Iowa? So I go sit across from him, when you sit down at the table. And I couldn't stand it. I got up and I walked over towards his table. And I said, excuse me, aren't you Dana Andrews? And he says, yes, I am. And I said, well, I'm Bob DeFlores, and I'm a big fan of yours, especially Best Years of Our Lives and Laura, some of the movies you made. He says, well, thank you, Bob. Are you eating alone? I said, yes. Well, why don't you join me? And there's some other actors coming soon. We're here doing a bicentennial play. So we're leaving this afternoon. So we sat there for an hour talking about movies, Hollywood, everything we could talk about. He was friends with Gene Tierney after the movie. Calls her on Christmas, her birthday. They were very good friends. He was that way with all the cast members. It wasn't just a movie, get paid, and thank you, mm-hmm. I'll see you. So he was very into people and actors and making sure of, you know, taking care of the actor. So anyway, here comes Howard Duff, who was also in the Bicentennial play. Monty Markham, who was very popular in television. And they sat down, they were talking movies. Finally, he gets up and says, well, we better head to the airport, we gotta leave. So he tears off a piece of paper and he says to Bob DeFlores, keep up the good work, Dana Andrews. But as he's walking out, he turns around again and he comes back and he says, you know, my wife and I live in Brentwood. If you're ever out in California, please look us up. We'd like to take you up the coast to our yacht, take you out on the ocean, and we can fish, go out to dinner. And I said, well, gee, that's really nice of you. And then
he says, total stranger.
So then they leave. I go back to Blackhawk. And they say, how was the buffet up there at the Blackhawk Hotel? And I said, it was great. I said, I had lunch with Dana Andrews and Howard Duff. And they says, what are they doing in town? I said, well, there's a bicentennial player in Davenport. But great guy, great stories, really cared about his fellow actors. And, you know, it was a pleasure meeting him,
right.
And his wonderful appearance, and he's so elegant. Voice is so great. He just is.
I can still see him in the nose of that derelict World War II
best
aircraft
scene.
After the war.
Yes.
He's reminiscing. He's been through hell in the war, and all of these
yes.
terrible memories
yeah.
are going through
that
his mind.
That scene is
yeah.
wonderful.
It is.
It's the most memorable scene.
It's a wonderful story you tell about him,
yes.
too. I'm glad to hear he's a nice guy.
Very nice
always
guy.
Always admired him. Bob DeFlores here, a guy who knows Hollywood. It's actors, it's films. We'll continue with Bob right after this.
Back in the late 1800s, if your brewery burned to the ground, it usually meant you were out of business for good. But Joseph Wolf rebuilt his brewery and continued brewing his beer until Prohibition hit. And a 93-year dry spell isn't stopping great-granddaughters Pat and Kathy from bringing it back. Go to wolfbrewing.com, click on Beer Finder so you can bring it back to your home. Ask for Wolf's, Stillwater's original craft beer. Wolf Brewing Company, Stillwater, Minnesota.
They've been sitting on that shelf for years. Those special memories of your childhood on slides, videotapes, or 8mm film. You want to share them, but you don't have a way to do it. Now is the time to let Images of the Past do it for you, and you'll have those special memories to share with the family. Images of the Past can transfer your memories to DVD to be enjoyed anytime by the whole family. Think of the future, preserve the past. On Main Street in Stillwater at Images of the Past and at imagesofthepast.com.
The 1920s were a golden age for baseball and custom-tailored clothing. That golden age is back at Jaime's Haberdashery in St. Paul. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Make each visit uniquely yours with hats, suits, casual wear, and accessories. Visit their barbershop for a hot lather shave. It's the golden age again at Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at jaimes.com.
The Stillwater area is most fortunate to be the home of Valley Bookseller, located right on Main Street in downtown. If you or anyone you know likes to read, this is the bookstore for you. Books, book clubs, book specials, book events, and more books. Check out their website at valleybookseller.com to see events, special sales, and staff recommendations. Call 651-430-3385. Valley Bookseller. Great books. Great people. 217 Main Street North, Stillwater. We are back here. Look at that time fly. It always does, and we have Bob DeFloris on. We're talking about Hollywood. The good old days
the
of
good
Hollywood
old days,
here with
yeah.
Bob DeFloris, who grew up in Hollywood, who is a film archivist, preservationist, all around. Mr. Movies, I call him, a guy who really cares about our film heritage and is doing great work preserving it and showing these treasures, too. You do. You go about the
right,
community,
yes.
Bob. Bring along your projector. Yes, a projector.
A projector, yes. Which
not,
people,
a power, not a PowerPoint.
And people think it's from the 1900s, but it's 1970 projector.
or okay, 1920. Yeah. One of those two. But
definitely, yeah.
I want to ask you, you've been introducing us to some of the stars you've met along the way. And we've talked on previous shows about Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, Loretta Young. You knew all them. Bing Crosby, you worked with him.
Right,
you helped all these people assemble their private film collections. I want to ask you, what are your favorite motion pictures, first of all?
Okay, my favorite motion picture is Arsenic and Old Lace with Cary Grant and Josephine Hull. Mm-hmm. And John Alexander and James Gleason has all the wonderful character actors in it, which I think are very important as part of the picture. I also like, and many of us do, It's a Wonderful Life, which is classic. Holiday Inn is up there at the top with one of my top five. And I like film noir. I like a lot of the film noir of the 40s and 50s.
Tell people who don't know, we've heard that term, film noir. What does it mean, Bobby?
Film noir is like dark, kind of, a better saying for it. It's kind of a gloomy mystery.
Kind of Sherlock Holmes
Foggy London type movies. But they made a slug of those in the 40s and 50s, and they're just wonderful movies. They have the atmosphere, and they have everything in them. Okay. I love those kind of movies.
Mm-hmm.
And Lost Horizon with Ronald Coleman. I'm a big Ronald Coleman fan, and those are the kind of movies that I really enjoy the most.
There are two biggies in 39, Gone with the Wind.
Gone with the
Wizard
Wind,
of Oz.
Wizard of Oz.
Are they up there if they're not in your top five? Are they?
They're up there, and yes, very much so. I'm more of a fan of The Wizard of Oz than I am with Gone with the Wind.
Why is that,
I don't know why. There's I appreciate what went into Gone with the Wind. It's classic. It's one of the top films of our time. I certainly enjoy it. But there's something about The Wizard of Oz, I guess being a kid and seeing it when it first came out, and then also through the years, and just seeing Gone with the Wind once actually. That's the only time I've seen it.
Oh, okay.
But I favor Wizard of Oz a little bit more than Gone with the Wind. That's just me now.
Sure.
Other
sure.
people will say, you know, Gone with the Wind is their favorite.
Favorite motion picture studios. You know, we have MGM, 20th Century, Paramount, all those.
Okay, this is the order of what I like.
Okay.
You cannot beat Paramount Pictures in the 30s, in talkies, early talkies, all the way up to about 19, early 40s is what I loved. That Paramount had a look that a lot of the other studios just couldn't.
What's the look? What was the look?
The look is, if let's take We're Not Dressing, 1934, Bing Crosby, Carol Lombard. The set is on the ocean, moonlit night. He's singing, the palm trees. Everything is so magical, so romantic. The lighting, the you feel like you're right there, even though you're in a soundstage. You feel like you're in Hawaii somewhere. They had that look. The early Universal, next studio. The horror films, Dracula, Frankenstein, you'll never be able to duplicate those.
Scare your pants off.
Yeah, and they had that old early soundtrack and mystery-looking look to them.
Bela Lugosi, Karloff.
Yes, right, and I love, of course, I would have to say the next is MGM, actually, because of their big color films and musicals and what have you. Fox is in there. I like Fox. A studio that doesn't get a lot of credit, but I really enjoy, is Columbia, because Columbia did a lot of good movies, kind of a B picture studio, but did a lot of wonderful movies on low budgets, but they still rank as classics, a lot of them. So I'd have to put them in that order.
Okay. Directors from that era.
Oh, gosh. I like Frank Capra as one of the top directors that I like. And, oh, geez, I'm just trying to. There's so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
David Butler. Trying to think. Mervyn LeRoy. You know, all kinds of. I mean, there's just a ton of them. Just to get them off my head.
Sure.
Got about 25 of them in your.
You've known so many Hollywood stars. I mentioned a couple. Why don't you just go over a couple of those? Some big names you knew and helped assemble their film.
Okay. Well, Buddy Rogers. That was in Wings, 1927. You know, the big classic. He also was in a lot of early sound pictures, married to Mary Pickford for many years, and I helped Buddy Rogers, did a tribute to him at University of Kansas, where actually he went to school in the 20s, and I went to school there in the 50s, so to speak. And I've helped Loretta Young,
Bing Crosby,
Ginger Rogers, Eleanor Powell.
You were invited into their homes, too, in many cases.
Oh, yeah. I've been to, you know, Loretta Young's house 8 or 9 times.
Did she really open the door with that big swirl of that formal gown?
She came down the stairway that way and sails across the floor towards me like her legs aren't moving, like she's floating. Wonderful lady. We could do an hour show just talking about that.
Love to.
And all kinds of other people, character actors, band people, Tex Beneke, who was with the Glenn Miller Orchestra, Frankie Carl, the famed pianist, composer, was a friend of mine, worked on a documentary on him, Russ Carlisle, who, you know, was a big band singer. I've helped a lot of musicians over the years and preserved a lot of performances, big band and jazz.
You mentioned character actors.
Yes.
These are supporting actors, character actors. Bob, is it right to say that without these people, you couldn't have the big movies that we had or have? They're critical, aren't they?
I
mean, you've got your big stars out front, but you've got to have these characters.
Let me tell you.
Yeah.
When you went to the movies, 30s, 40s, 50s, if you knew Edward Everett Horton was going to be in a movie, Eric Blore as the butler, or Franklin Pangborn as the hotel clerk.
I love their names.
Or Hattie McDaniel as a maid.
Of course.
Without these people in the movie, it wouldn't be what makes the movie. There's a movie put out, You Can't Take It With You, and it has Ann Miller, Lionel Barrymore, Mitch Auer, Jimmy Stewart, terrific cast. And it's made up of a lot of character actors, and they all have their own thing that they're known for. And that's why you went to see the movie. It wasn't
so they were a draw in themselves.
You didn't go if you knew Thomas Mitchell was in a film. Mm-hmm. Oh wow.
Okay.
This is going to be good. He's in there. Yeah. Henry Danielle always played an evil part if he was in the movie. Gail Sondegard, who was
from Minnesota.
Scary, Minnesota would scare you half to death. If you knew she was in the movie, oh, that's going to make it better. See, this is what you're thinking. In a
they didn't get the star billing.
No, but they were certainly in hundreds of movies. Yeah. The Gabby Hayes, you know, all the character actors.
Who was
the
frog voice guy who has appeared in so many?
Smiley Burnett.
Smiley Burnett.
Then came Pat Buttram.
Okay.
Yeah.
So fantastic.
And you had all the cowboy stars and what have you, you know. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, the pantheon of Minnesota movie stars, it's a long one, and a lot of people don't realize how many stars then and in recent years came out of here. Just the Andrews sisters, of course, were born here.
Great.
They're not only singers, but they appeared in movies.
You name it.
Yeah, Lou Ayres. What's the big movie?
All Quiet on the Western Front.
Right. From Minneapolis.
And Dr. Kilgore series.
Yeah, right.
Both at MGM and on, you know, television, you know.
Arness brothers. Arness. Gunsmoke and his brother Peter.
Peter Arness, sure.
Well, actually, he went by Peter Graves, didn't
Peter
he?
Graves, yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Peter Graves.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We saw him the other night in a movie.
Yeah. And let's see, Richard Carlson. He was in I Led Three Lives.
Right. I always liked Richard Carlson.
Yeah. Yep.
He's a good actor in a lot of movies.
Arlene Dahl from Minneapolis.
Arlene Dahl.
Let's see, My Wild Irish Rose. She was in that.
Let's see.
William Demarest.
Great character actor.
Uncle Charlie and My Three Sons.
Actually, a vaudevillian also,
really?
on the vaudeville stage.
From St. Paul.
Right.
A lady named Frances Gum from Grand Rapids.
Yep.
We know her as
Judy Garland.
Judy Garland.
Right.
Know, really, Baby Gum.
Baby Gum.
Yeah. Tippi Hedren, Minnesotan. From New Ulm, Minnesota.
New Ulm.
In more recent years, Jessica Lange.
Jessica Lange, sure.
From Cloquet.
Who's still doing great acting today.
She is. E.G. Marshall.
Great.
Who appeared in film and television. Television, The Defenders, wasn't
right.
he great?
Yes, great actor.
From Owatonna.
Yeah, Owatonna.
And how about you Superman folks? Noel Neal. Right? Lois Lane.
Yep, I was with her a couple years ago when she came to town.
She pronounced it Noel or Noel? Is it Noel?
She didn't pronounce it Noel.
Noel Neal. And she was from Minneapolis.
Right.
Lois Lane
right.
and Superman.
And she said to me that Bing Crosby gave her start in show business. Yeah.
How about that?
He was responsible for that.
Wow, how nice. Okay, Noel from Minneapolis. Jane Russell.
Wow. Yes.
I think of legs, long legs.
The Outlaw.
And Bemidji.
Howard Hughes. Uh-huh.
She's from Bemidji. Winona Ryder from Winona.
Right, Winona.
Lily St. Cyr. Richard Widmark.
Richard Widmark.
From a little town called Sunrise, Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
And Gig Young.
Great actor.
Yep, from St. Cloud. So
right.
You can read profiles of these folks in a fine book, Bob. You wrote the foreword to it, or the introduction. Tell us a little bit about the book. It's out there.
Well, it's Minnesotans in the Movies and by Rolf Canton.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you bios on over 100 and some odd, you know, they most of them were born in Minnesota, but there were some, like Henry Fonda, that came up here to go to school and stayed here a while. And
Brando did.
Marlon Brando. And so William S. Hart lived downtown Minneapolis when the streets were all mud and dirty for a while. So, yeah, a lot of these people, some of them weren't born here but lived here for a while.
Marlon Brando got kicked out of Shattuck, I think, in the military school. Sounds like Marlon, doesn't it?
Right, but there's a lot of good people, a lot of character actors, a lot of good actors, and, you know, and especially... One of the actors that I think should really get more recognition is Lou Ayres.
Okay.
I've always felt that Minnesota should do something on the character actors, do a TV special or do a documentary on them. And I have film clips of all of them, too. But it would be nice to let the younger generation as well as the older generation look back with fondness and see some of these weight character actors. Now, the character actors did not get a lot of money for being in the movies, and they played in hundreds of movies. And the sad part is toward the end of their life, many of them were penniless and didn't make...
No pension, nothing.
And they ended up in the actor's home in Brentwood.
Mm.
which is nice because it took care of a lot of the actors that couldn't afford to be in a nursing home.
Is that actors taking care of other actors? Do they contribute, or how does that work?
Well, it is what happens is it's a home for actors, and there is a fund that goes into that home that if you're down and out and you can't pay your bills. This is an interesting quick thing I have to tell you. Fayard Nicholas, the great Nicholas Brothers. And I knew him very well. I got him a lot of clips from some of his movies. Fayard, towards the end of his life, had hard times. Didn't have a lot of money. And his rent was due and bills and what have you. The dancers around the country contributed to Fayard's dismay, for his problems. Mm-hmm. But Hugh Hefner bailed him out with a big check. Took care of his rent, took care of a lot of his bills. And so we got to take our hat off to Hugh Hefner for preserving and restoring motion pictures, and he's spent millions of dollars doing that.
The man who bought you Playboy has done many, many good things.
Yes, definitely.
All right. We just have a couple minutes left. You have a great story about the Wicked Witch of the West.
Yes.
Wizard of Oz, the witch that scares us all as kids and even as adults. Margaret Hamilton is her name.
Right.
And you got a chance to know her. You drove her, didn't you, to the airport?
I drove her from Grand Rapids to the Twin Cities with stories that we could take up the whole hour talking about Margaret Hamilton. But coming down from the Twin Cities, she told me about her movies and teaching school and acting and making a Wizard of Oz and how she got burned. And I'm going to probably save that for another show because it takes quite a while.
She got burned.
Yeah, when really? She's melting into the ground, she actually got burned.
Wow.
And so she sent me a book many years later. Thank you for the lovely ride. I took her to Pepito's for lunch.
Joe's place.
Yes, and real quickly here, okay, there was a couple bikers in there, and about 6'8".
A couple of hard guys, yeah.
And they came up and said, "Weren't you at the showing of The Wiz?" And she says, "Yes, dearies, I was." And they went back and came back with a napkin, and the one guy said, can you give us a copy of your..." And I thought, what happened to the voice that you just had a minute ago? That rough voice. And they just became so humble. And they thanked her. And
the witch who melted a couple of
bikers. And before she left, I took her to the gate at the airport.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, "Would you get on the phone and say something to my daughter?" Mm-hmm. I got one of my daughters on the phone, and she got on the phone. She says, "All right, my dearies, if you don't pay heed to your father, I'll come and get you, my little one." And they didn't know at the time what that was, but how important it was. And I asked my daughter the other day, "Do you remember that?" "Well, I kind of remember that." And I said, "Well, that was the Wicked Witch of the West." Real neat lady.
But, wonderful.
But
wonderful
there's all
story.
Kinds of other stories. Like My Little Chickadee, and she told me about Mae West, and we could do another hour on
we'll
that.
We'll do another hour.
We'll do that.
Bob DeFloris, in fact, from time to time, you're up at the Heights Theater in Columbia Heights.
I'll be up there next Thursday. Doing Vertigo.
Vertigo.
With Jimmy Stewart.
Okay. Bob gives the backstories. He tells us what we're going to see, why we're going to see what we're going to see, some backstories on the actors, how the film was put together.
Right.
It makes the film experience
it
so
does.
Much richer. Thank
and
you for
I got to say this. You do the same when you do your everyday music.
Well, thank you. I learned from you. I learned from a master because this.
I think people out there are so entranced in your stories, too, where the song came from, everything.
Thank you. Well, I learned from you. Thank you, Bob DeFloris, Mr. Movies. And I guess we're out of time here, folks. Happy Mom's Day to all you mothers out there. Thank you so much. And good fishing out there, everybody. See if you can not forget Mom, too, as you're angling out there. Okay,
thank you.
And Stan Turner here. And please join me for the All Request and Dedication program brought to you by the Wolf Brewing Company. Coming up here this Monday, right after the news at noon. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.